Episode number 214 with Derek Tenbush.
I got X-ray specs for eyes. I can see right through you.
Welcome to the Heads Up Poker Podcast. This is Steve Barton, and thank you for tuning in. I'm here with my buddy Mikey and none other than Derek Tenbush. Derek, thank you for coming on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Steve, you didn't say extra special guest.
I didn't. You know, that's I was going to go into saying Derek's a poker player, co-owner of TPE. What am I missing, Derek?
Oh, we can move. We can move on.
That's pretty much
it. Lover.
Yeah, that's the most important part.
Literally a former rock star of a rock band.
star is a bit of a stretch, but
well, we had a bet one time. Who was it? It was with Clayton Fletcher and Mark Aliotto, and Mark said at one point you opened for thousands of people, right?
Yeah, we played some pretty big shows back in the day.
Okay,
but they were never there to see us. They were always there to see who was playing after us.
An opening bet. right on. Beer connoisseur. Yes. Probably have a more efficient liver than mine.
I don't know. It might be on its last legs at this point.
I'm hoping I'm only halfway through mine. We'll see.
Do you have any days where you're like, man, I just got to take a break?
Actually, today is kind of one of those days. I'm thinking like not having any beer today.
Okay, sounds good.
I don't know. It probably gets over dramatized because when I Twitch, when I'm on streaming on Twitch, I usually have a few
right. Games.
So I think people just assume that that's happening every moment of every day.
No, I'm sorry.
and they're not far off, but it's really only like maybe 4 days a week. I try to take it easy a few days a week.
Except
when I'm in Vegas, then it's 7 days.
Yeah, right. Of course. Have you ever gone to, is it always, beer's always okay, right? Or have you ever gone to like a brew pub and you're just like, I can't believe I wasted my time coming here? I mean, there's usually always something that's quaffable. Yes.
Yeah. I can usually find something. I would say that's happened maybe like twice where I was like, damn, I don't like anything they have here. And it's usually like newer breweries and stuff who just haven't really figured out, you know, the recipes,
the process,
things like that. But yeah, I can pretty much always find something to drink. I mean, honestly, I have more problems at like, I don't know, like Applebee's or something, because it'll just be like Bud Light, Coors Light, Heineken,
and okay,
like, and like Michelob Ultra. That's when I really can't find anything to drink, and then I just go to whiskey.
Yeah, you know what? I've actually there was a point I went to our county fair here locally in Ventura. And I walked around for an hour, and first thing there, I was like, okay, I'm going to get a beer. And I walked around, and I just saw Bud Light, I saw Miller Lite, and I saw Budweiser for an hour. And I'm like, there's about three times a year where I question, like, maybe I'm not an alcoholic, because in situations like that, I don't drink.
Yeah, exactly.
But then I ran into a buddy, and he had a beer that, you know, looked hazy, like a wheat or something, and I'm all, where did you get that? Where to be in the right direction? And I got one. But
when I do drink, I love Heineken. That's my go-to beer. But I guess,
yeah, I mean, it's
kind of, I guess it's bland if you're looking for real flavorful, you know, exotic stuff, certainly.
Yeah, I think I've just killed my palate so much that I just need more and more hops. You know, it's like a heroin addiction. Like, you get used to like the small quantity, and you just got to keep increasing it and increasing it until you die. And so that's pretty much the path I'm on.
I like the hops too. You know, I kind of go in waves, you know, and I started out with like the dark Guinness ones, and then I went to like lagers, and then I've been on an IPA kick for about 5 years. But I'm starting to go to like the porters, like the ones that are kind of the chocolate or milk stouts or the peanut butter ones, you know, ones like that. Those are starting to catch my taste buds now. So I think the next few years may be on to those.
Yeah, I've gotten to the point now where I kind of move with the seasons. And I think that came from working at a brewery for 5 years, because we would release seasonal beers. So you kind of got used to like, oh, it's, you know, it's getting to be October, time for a pumpkin beer. And then all of a sudden it's November and it's like stout and porter season. But yeah, for summertime, it's pretty much IPAs, and it's occasionally like some lagers or pilsners or something, but for the most time, it's just IPAs for me.
Yeah. I like them. They're good.
Steve, we haven't really talked to anyone about Vegas other than me and Carlos since then. Can we
catch up then,
or is this old news?
It was a WSOP question mark. I was out there for almost 3 weeks, but you had just left as I was getting into town.
That's right. Yeah.
How was your summer? When did you get in there? How long were you there?
I'm trying to remember the dates now. I know I was there 2 weeks.
Okay.
And I can't remember what days.
I think you left June 6th or something, because I got in the 8th, or maybe you left like the 9th and I got in the 8th, but it was like right around there. Okay. So beginning of June is okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was interesting. Like it was the first time I went where I had no schedule of tournaments that I was going to play, and I didn't sell any action. So I literally I didn't have any tournaments that I had to play.
Okay.
And my game plan was just like, because you know how it is when you're in Vegas. Like, there's days you wake up and you're like, fuck, I don't want to play today. Like, or yep. I'm tired, or oh shit, I got sick, or I'm hungover, or, you know, whatever your thing is. You don't really want to play. But, you know, if you sold half yourself, you kind of have to go play one way or another. Even though your backers would probably appreciate it if you just took the day off when you don't want to play. But, you know, you're there for a limited time. You want to get as many things in as you can. So I just went out there and said, you know what, I'm just going to play, like, whatever. Like, I knew my first tournament was going to be the $5 million Big 50, whatever it was called. I knew that I was going to play that. But after that, I was like wide open.
Yeah.
And I kind of might have ended up, I don't know. I had one of the funnest summers, even though it was by far my shortest trip out there.
Yeah.
But I had an absolute blast. But I also played the least poker I've ever played.
Oh, okay. How many tournaments did you play?
I think I played five.
Oh, wow.
Five tournaments live, and then like the one online bracelet.
Which you had a nice run in.
Yeah. You cashed for a couple K in that.
Yeah, I went pretty deep. Ended up, you know, sob story. Lost with aces to pocket fours to bust. So that was fun. But yeah, like, you know, there was days where I was like, oh, I want to play today, but I just didn't feel like dealing with like the Rio and parking and all that kind of stuff. So I would literally drive over to like the Orleans and play. They had like a pretty good tournament schedule of like low to mid buy-in stuff. So like I played like a 250 knockout there, and I think I played like a, I don't know, like a $300 bird or something. And like I was just having so much fun doing that I kind of like pretty much skipped the Rio altogether with the exception of the Big 50. But like I said, I had an absolute great time. Like, you know, went out and saw a bunch of spots. You know, I had lived there for a while, so I kind of, now all of a sudden I had all my like favorite like haunts, you know, like
places to go down a little bit. Yeah.
So it's like, I gotta go eat at that restaurant. I gotta go eat at that or drink at that brewery. So I ended up doing a lot more of that kind of stuff. So it was really cool. Like I said, it was short. It was just a weird combination of events where it was hard for me to stay out there too much longer. I'm working with this distillery now, and we're a very small team. So it was just harder to be away.
So you being gone 2 weeks is a big impact.
Yeah. And I was able to pull it off, but it would have been hard to do too much longer without it becoming kind of a problem. So
where are you living now?
I'm back in North Carolina. So I live in Durham now, which is just another suburb of the Raleigh Durham area where I used to live. So I live like 15 minutes from my old house, literally.
Okay.
Did you guys buy, or are you renting now, or what?
Yeah, we bought another house.
Nice.
Which I don't know. But part of me is like, do I really want to get back into home ownership again? Like my son's out, you know, he's gone and or not gone. He's around, but he's not in the house. Well, actually, technically he is living with us right now, but anyway, you get the point. So I kind of wanted to, I don't know. I was kind of enjoying the nomad life a little bit of like, renting in Vegas and stuff. But then we kind of decided, you know, let's look at it as we're buying a home base and not buying a home. So we're like, okay, we'll buy this place. It's a good place to live while we're here, but then we can travel and do other things. And if we ever just want to move again, we'll rent it or sell it or whatever. So yeah, back in Durham, and you know, I like this area. I really liked Vegas a lot as well, but the opportunity was too good not to come back for. So
kind of that's a lot of action though, moving all the way and then changing. Is a part of this where it's like frustrating, like, wow, what a waste of a or you're just the Barton-esque optimism, you know, it was a cool experience and we had fun.
Yeah. I basically looked at it as like a really fun, like 9-month vacation. Cause you know, just being out in Vegas for that long. And it's funny too, because the whole time I lived there, I think I maybe played 3 live tournaments. So it kind of goes along with my summer, actually. But the best part about it was that when we decided to move out there, we essentially gave away or donated pretty much everything we owned. We had a small storage unit for like
photo albums.
We kept like photo albums and a couple pieces of artwork, and just little things like that. So we just bought a tiny storage unit to put all that stuff in. But everything else, like when we moved to Vegas, everything we owned fit just in my Jeep Wrangler. My wife That's drove cool. out as well, but she had 3 dogs in her car. So it was like, yeah, all of our possessions were narrowed down to like the size of a Jeep Wrangler. And it was the best thing ever. Like, I feel so, I mean, now I have more stuff, obviously, but just getting rid of all that like junk, just like, it was like so freeing. Like I felt a little like Carlos for a minute. I was like, this is the best. And now it's kind of like changed my lifestyle, because now I just don't buy stuff anymore. I mean, you know, obviously we had to buy like a bed and a couch and a TV and stuff, but I don't buy any little shit that I don't need. I literally have like stopped going to stores.
Carlos is so grateful that he just wiped a tear from the corner of his eye.
Yes.
Just hearing that someone finally understands where he's at.
Yep. I think if anybody tried it, they would be happy they did it.
I need to do that. That's kind of a wake up call to me. I got a storage unit with a bunch of tools that I've had since I was a teenager, and I don't want to get rid of them, but I can easily put a shed in my backyard and put them there and then save $150 a month.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff I can go through and I could probably get rid of a third of it at least, that I just don't need.
Why do I feel like there could be a different story where like KB's wife just slapped him in the face one morning and said, pack up the car. We're heading out. We're going back east. He's stealing the truth from us.
It was very undramatic. It was like, I mean, it's kind of a long story about why, like the distillery stuff is kind of a long story, but we started talking about maybe moving somewhere different. While we were there, you know, we were just renting while we were looking for a house. We actually made an offer on a house, but they ended up deciding not to sell. So we didn't actually buy it, thankfully.
That would have been a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. We started to look around because we were having trouble finding a house we really liked. And the biggest challenge for my wife was the dogs, because what I learned is you can't just take your dog for a walk in Vegas in the summer, because the ground is literally so hot that it burns their feet. So you have to like, you have to buy this balm and put it on their feet, or put like little shoes on them. And my dogs are not ever going to put shoes on because they're pains in the asses. Yeah. So she would wake up at like 5 a.m. to walk the dogs. And then she would basically wait till like 6 p.m. to walk them again. And it was just really frustrating and kind of a pain in the ass for her, because she's the primary caregiver for the dogs. So we started to look, and we were like, nah, maybe let's go try Austin for a while. Let's try Portland for a while. We started looking at all these different places to go, and just rent again for, you know, 6-9 months or whatever. But then this opportunity came up, and I was like, all right, well, I guess we're going back to North Carolina. I think my son's the most disappointed, because he always wanted to move to the West Coast, which he still could. But he didn't. He ended up actually getting a job here. So
your mom probably missed son a little bit too. That might be.
Yeah,
that was, probably, that, that yeah. was an incentive for moving back east. But I guess if he was going to get ready to move west, it wasn't, you know.
Yeah. And we didn't, you know, we actually didn't see him a ton because he was at college. So, you know, we'd see him every few months, I guess. More often during football season, because I would go to games. But yeah, he came out and visited a few times. Him and his girlfriend came out once. I think he came out twice in that time. And they love Vegas, but they really wanted to go to Southern. Like, he would like to move to Southern California, I think. And we actually looked there, too.
Okay. What areas?
So we were like, we didn't want to like – so, you know, I used to live in California. We sold our house out there when we moved here. Mm-hmm. And we didn't want to go backwards in terms of, like, losing all that equity that we made. Yeah. Like, we didn't want to just take all that profit and put it right back into another house. We're like, well, we can't live in like LA or, you know, San Diego area. And we kind of, my old guitar player lives in Temecula.
Yeah.
And I was shocked to find out like how reasonably priced that area is. Now, it's pretty far from like Hollywood and stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that area was really reasonable. So we actually looked at a bunch of houses there, but kind of the same thing. Like, it just ended up not happening. So
yeah, my buddy has a house down there, a rental, and yeah, it's very affordable compared to the rest of California. That's for sure. Yeah.
Was your house in Carolina that you bought, that you sold, was that like all paid off? So it was just a big.
For them, we
not,
still
not to dig in your finances, but the way you're sounding, we're gonna go here, we're gonna go there. It sounds like one of the Kennedys who retired from.
I was gonna ask the same thing. Do you, like, for when you get a loan, do you do at least 20% down? Do you do a 30 year? Do a 15 year?
When we moved, so when we bought our house in LA, we were, I was 22 or something, or 23, okay, and broke and all that stuff. So literally, I had to finance the entire thing.
Yeah.
But then when we moved here, we put a bunch of that money down.
Yeah, it went up a lot.
We just wanted a really small, mortgage payment.
Yeah.
But everybody kept, I don't know if this is true, but everybody kept saying, like, it's good to just have a mortgage for like tax purposes or purposes.
They can't do simple math when they say that, because let's say you pay 10 grand in interest in a year for that loan. Well, you, let's say you're in a 25% tax bracket. That means that you get a tax break of $2,500. Okay. Well, if you didn't have the mortgage in the first place,
you'd have all that money. Yeah. Yeah,
I will trade you $2.50 if you give me $10 all day fucking long, my friend.
Right. Yeah. So I don't really, like, we probably could have just bought the thing in cash, but we did do a small mortgage. And luckily the real estate market was really good. We moved into like the perfect neighborhood in terms of real estate, thankfully. Good. So yeah, so it's the one thing not the one thing. I win at selling houses, but I lose at poker. So I just keep making up for my losses by selling a house and moving into a new one.
Would you ever leave Vegas? I mean, I think you're kind of for you, you're very busy. I mean, I kind of am too. I grind cash like 50 hours a week, but both of us are not real great students of the game. We don't like studying. Do you ever leave Vegas? Like, I'm like recommitting to poker. I'm going to, or is that, you're just, you're accepting this as kind of your role. I mean, I know Mark was always trying to encourage you, like, with just a little work.
Yeah.
You could be like really good.
Yeah. It's funny. I think one of my biggest problems is that I started Tournament Poker Edge. Like, the last thing I kind of want to do when I stop working on TPE all day is to go open up TPE and start studying. Okay. You know what I mean? I think that's part of it. Like, I'm around, like, I still love talking about it, and I still enjoy playing, but the studying part just has no interest to me. And I know that's like a terrible thing to say as a guy who runs a training site. But it's just like, I don't know if it's just that I've like gotten to like too old to care anymore, or, but I always told people, like, I don't really play. I never played poker like for the money or like to
sure,
you know, win a ring, or it was just, I enjoyed the social aspect of it more than anything at all. Exactly. And I kind of realized that I can do that and be bad. Like, and I just still enjoy it. So, you know, like, it's not like if I was losing hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, I would be like, shit, I better learn how to play this game. But, you know, I'm very comfortable in my like break even to small profit to losing sessions. Like, it just doesn't bother me too much. Yeah. I hate losing a tournament, but I never really care about losing the money, if that makes any sense.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Did you have any, did you save your hand history from your run in the WSOP.online? Is that going to be possibly a series where we can hear Mark mocking you for several hours, which we all enjoy?
I actually tried to, but I couldn't figure out, because you can't use a HUD. And there's as soon as you bust a tournament, you guys have probably played on there. As soon as you bust, it says, like, do you want to watch back your hand history? And it's like, yes or no. But there's no, like, how do I save? I mean, I guess I could have watched it back and Camtasia did it or something.
Well, I always say no. I always say no. I thought if you would say yes, they would email you like a file with the hand history. No, that's not.
Maybe that's what they do. I've never hit yes. I just always assumed it was like, it would just open up a replayer and you could watch it right there.
I don't think it said, do you want to watch your hand history? I thought it's, do you want your hand history? But
that could be. The answer is no. The good thing is that Mark was watching, like, not, you know, not the entire thing because he was playing it, but once he busted, he basically opened up, you know, my table on the big screen TV and was watching.
Yeah.
So he busted my balls when he needed to.
There's a couple spots you didn't take when you were short. That's usually what, one of his complaints against you, you know?
Yeah. I can't even remember. I know. Yeah. There was definitely one spot where I should have shoved, but of course I just, you know, then somebody else did and somebody called and they had me crushed and I would have lost. So I was like, see, right. It wasn't a shove.
Yeah.
It always works out that way. Every time I do a hand history review with Mark, he's like, why are you folding there? And then the hand plays out and he's like, damn it. You folded in, you know, incorrectly, but at the right time. I'm like, yeah, that's what I do. But if you fold as much as I do, you're eventually going to fold in the right spots.
Yeah. No, you're pretty tight. Are you still like a 14-11?
Nah, I've opened it up. Now. I'm like a 7. I'm like a 17-13 now. I've opened.
Oh,
it
damn! Up. Wow, look out.
That's a good number.
I'm tending to play a lot more hands. I just rarely am raising. Like I'm a habitual caller now. Like somebody lays, I just call. I call with everything. 7-9 suited. Get in there.
What percentage of your time would you say is, you know, for TPE, for playing poker at the distillery?
These days I'd say it's probably pretty evenly split, like, you know, literally like 33 33 33.
Okay.
That will change soon with football season starting because I won't play Sundays anymore.
Yeah,
so it'll go down a little bit, but yeah, I'd say it's pretty close to evenly split between the three.
Okay. Do you do betting on the football? On the football, like
I do. I do daily fantasy, and I do a couple of season long fantasy leagues. But I don't bet on games too much. Like if I'm, you know, like I'm going to Reno in October. While I'm there, I'll bet some games. And yeah. I might if I see something I really like I might throw down $50 or something.
But, how are the? I was actually curious that how are the Dolphins supposed to be this year? Are they going to be respectable or just another hoping to get 500 sort of team?
Yeah, they're going to be. Well, they're projected to be. Bad. In fact, I think they have the worst odds to win the Super Bowl.
If oh, wow.
All the Vegas odds.
Who's that quarterback?
Well, right now it's
Tannehill still?
No, they traded him to the Titans. It's Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Oh, Jesus.
Mm.
And then they traded for Josh Rosen. Okay. My guess is Josh Rosen will be starting before the end of the year. But this is the first year where I've never been one of those guys who's like, I'm going to root for my team to do bad so they can get a high draft pick. But I think this might be the first year I'd do that. Because, only because
they have no shot. We might as well hope for next year.
Yeah, pretty much. But I've actually, like, you know, I've obviously follow pretty close, like training camp reports and stuff. And I actually, like I was telling my son the other day, what I'm really worried about is they're not going to be as bad as people think. I think they're actually going to, like, in fact, I think a good bet is the over on their wins, which I think is 5.
Oh.
I think that's the Vegas line. Okay. I will bet on over that. Okay. If nothing else, we're going to beat the Jets twice. So that's 2 right there.
I'm picturing an opening day KB sitting on the couch and the Dolphins run back the opening kickoff. He's like immediately thinking Super Bowl. This is our year, baby.
I mean, don't be wrong. I would take it, but I just don't want to finish like 7-9 and just
right. Rest.
I basically just want to either go to the playoffs or be the worst team in the NFL and draft Tua from Alabama.
When was the last time the Dolphins made the playoffs? Was it the Pennington year?
I believe it was 8 years ago, and it might have. I'm trying to remember who our quarterback was. I mean, it might have been Tannehill.
I'm trying to remember the last. Well, Pennington like came there and had one like MVP year. And then if you know, he just killed his shoulder. But I'm trying to.
Yeah, I think because I went to the Dolphins playoff game against Baltimore in Miami like 10 years ago or something, but I think they had one more since then, but I can't remember. It's been a long time, I'll tell you that.
Just to go back to Vegas, sorry, Steve and I have done our normal preparation here as we bounce around. I know Andrew Brokos had a very nice run in the main event. Did you have any other TPE pros that did anything, or do we have any coming down the line? Hopefully Andrew has a video series. I'm curious if anyone else has anything WSOP related.
Yeah, I know Andrew's actually completed and turned in his main event I guess, hand history review of sorts. Yeah, so I'm really excited about that. And it's a long one, too. I think it's like 8 parts or something. So I feel like that's going to be really good. And that was...
I was nervous he was going to put it all in a book and leave you guys dry there on that. You
know what I mean? I know he said something like, I kept, prolific notes or whatever on Twitter. And I was like, man, I really hope he took prolific notes for a TV series and not for another book. Yeah. or just a blog, or just do it on his like podcast or something.
Right.
That's a TV series.
Type it up and throw it out of an airplane for the masses, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, nothing else like too crazy. I had a buddy who also went deep in the World Series, and I actually had a little piece of him. So that was like the sweating those two was like, the best. Like the best Vegas memory I have. Not that I was there, but just sitting home watching it on Twitter and stuff.
Sure.
But yeah, there was nothing else like really crazy. Like, a lot of caches and
yeah,
relatively deep runs, but no final tables or anything super cool like that, unfortunately. And certainly not for me.
Do you have any new pros on TPE? Or I'm ashamed to say I have not watched a video in a while here or checked on what's. I don't know if there's, you want to share anything else that's shaking going on there.
Yeah, nothing too dramatic. We haven't added anybody all that new. I'm trying to remember when the last pro was that we added. I guess it was probably Snost.
Moshman.
Yeah, we added one since then. Jason Smith. He's like a US pro. And that's really about it.
Those guys are putting out a lot of material, though. Good stuff, I think.
Yeah. I like Colin a lot. He's just very matter of fact. He articulates himself well, and I like it. He does all the little lowball online tournaments.
Yeah, that's one of the things I like about it is that it's not all like, here's the $500 like Thursday thrill on Stars or whatever. It's sometimes it's like, oh, here's an $11 5K hand history.
Right, and that's probably the tournaments that a lot of people who start TPE or who play, so that's good.
Yeah, exactly. So but yeah, the biggest thing I like is that I'm excited for that Broco series. I think that's gonna be killer.
Yeah, he always puts out really good ones like that. What about Nate did one a while ago like that, and we haven't heard any from him.
Yeah, he I actually haven't spoken to Nate in a while, but I think he started his PhD or master's or
just listen to that podcast. I think he's a very busy man there.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, he got to the point. I think he got to the point where like it was he just did not have time.
Probably not even playing anymore.
Yeah. Which I understand as somebody who did.
Yeah, I can't even imagine. I got an associate's degree, and after that, I'm all F this. That's enough for me.
That's what I would have done, but I was playing in a band in college.
So yeah, you were a rock star, my friend. Thanks for having
me. Well, it was just like grad school was an excuse to not start a job yet. I was like, okay, I'll go to grad school so I can keep playing in this band a little longer.
When was the last time you actually performed? Has there ever been a night where, you got a couple buddies or like, dude, well, let's go. We can go to this bar and rip it up. And you're like, hey, done that? No,
it had been like many years, like a decade or something until... like 3 weeks ago. It was my wife's 30-year high school reunion, and we went to the same high school. So I went with her, and it just happened that the guy who I used to be in a band with in high school, was his band was playing the reunion. So he was like, hey, you should come up and play a few songs with us. So so I actually went on stage for the first time like 3 weeks ago, played 4 songs. It was fun.
Right on.
Nice.
Your guitar?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. But now I remember why I quit, because like my back was all sore and I'm tired the next day. And I'm like, oh, why did I do that? So I'm hanging my guitar back up for another decade.
That'd be fun, though. Relive your glory days for a bit.
Yeah, too old to rock and roll, too young to die. Is there an
that's right. Eventually those merge and you die.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. Where are you now? Are you on vacation? I just checked your Twitter and I see like you look like your poolside somewhere. Is that?
That's just like my neighborhood pool.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm always on vacation though. I live on a perpetual vacation. No, yeah, I'm just chilling at home. I'm actually supposed to go to the beach tomorrow, but it looks like it's going to rain all weekend. So I don't know. We might just end up staying home. Not really sure.
Mm-hmm. How is Raleigh? I don't even know. Is that like near the ocean or?
We're about the closest ocean beach is about 2.5 hours away.
Okay.
And then the Outer Bank. We have a little beach house out on the Outer Banks, which is about 4 hours away. Eh, like 3.5 now that they've improved the roads.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, so that's where we usually go. But I think if we go tomorrow, we're actually heading down to Wilmington, which is like 2 hours and 20 minutes or something.
I'm curious, maybe I don't know, to get Boris with Southern history, but I've always wondered down there, like a lot of the cities, like in the Northeast, like almost every city was on the ocean, you know, for doing business. Right. And you got all these big Southern cities, for God's sakes, that are like, you know, like Atlanta is just in like a swamp, isn't it? I don't know.
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, I'm just curious, were they like, they're probably like agricultural hubs that turned into cities or something, or you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think a lot of the bigger cities around here were tobacco towns.
Okay.
Originally, like Richmond and Norfolk, Raleigh, Charlotte. I think those were all big tobacco areas. But yeah, it's actually interesting you say that, because we don't really have we don't have big cities on the ocean. Wilmington is, I think, the biggest, and that's not a big city at all. So yeah, it's kind of interesting. Like, there's no ports here. You know, if you go up further north, like Virginia has big naval bases and stuff, and Philly. But yeah, there's no port towns here, which is kind of interesting. I never really thought about that.
Yeah, I mean, I always wondered that, why, you know, usually people gravitate towards the water, the ocean, but
yeah, we looked at, we originally looked at Wilmington as a spot to consider moving when we moved here, but we just needed a better airport, because at that time we both still had like regular old jobs and we would travel a lot. So
yeah, you have any dumb friends? You're like, I'm moving back to Raleigh. It's like, cool, at least you'll be near the beach again.
You know, I will say, the thing about Vegas, speaking of water, I learned to really appreciate Lake Mead. I don't know if you guys have ever gone out there while you've been in Vegas, but
I've flown over it so many times, and I don't think I've ever been there, honestly.
It is a blast. And it's like I lived on the far east side of Vegas, like out like East Henderson, basically. Yeah. So I was only like 15 minutes from Lake Mead, from my front door to the water side. And we would go out there 2 times a week or so.
Really?
Is there a place you can walk the dogs out there? Or?
Yeah, it's great, because like you can actually, we had to get a park pass, but if you go to the park, you can like literally drive your car right to the edge of the water. Like, you could step out your door into water if you wanted to. So we would take them there. One of them isn't good in public places, but we would bring the other ones out there and let them swim around and stuff. We had a blast.
Oh, so you can swim in the water and everything?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, you can rent jet skis, boats, all that kind of stuff. I assume there's fish in there, but I've never seen anybody fishing, which is
okay.
Interesting, I guess.
Okay.
Probably just better spots.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. What, at your, beach house in, it's in North Carolina.
Yeah. It's in Kildevil Hills.
What's that like? What's the beach like? Is it like a surfing town, or is it just kind of chill, almost like lake-like?
Yeah, it's super chill, which is what kind of like why I like it. Like,
yeah,
I've been to Myrtle Beach a few times, and even Wilmington is a little bit like that. It's like very touristy and like, you know, high rise hotels and all that kind of stuff. Whereas the Outer Banks is very, it's like old fishing town kind of feel.
Okay.
So yeah, it's no, like, I honestly think the tallest building there might be like 5 stories or something. Like, it's just old. It's old school. Way more laid back, way more relaxed. It's a little harder to get to, which I think is the reason.
Okay.
But I love it out there. It's one of my favorite places in the world.
Where is the best surfing place in the East Coast, I wonder, Steve? Where, you know, if you love surfing, obviously the Pacific Ocean, just a little more.
Oh, man. Waves, you know? I have no idea. I was going to say maybe down in like Florida somewhere where the water's warm and you got
maybe. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But I have no idea. I'm just.
Yeah, I know. I see people surfing when I'm in North Carolina, when I'm at the beach in North Carolina, but it doesn't look fun. Like, it's not like when you're watching YouTube videos where they're like, you know, 17 foot waves or 50.
They're just these little tiny things.
Yeah. Like, yeah. I'm like, is that really surfing? I don't know, man.
He's technically standing on the board.
I mean, I can do that in a lake and it's not surfing.
I can't remember. We might probably ask a lot of these questions before Steve at some point, but, when did you get involved with like the all the dog charities and that sort of thing? Is that a lifelong passion of yours, or?
No, it was kind of by accident. We had a beagle who passed away, 8 or 9 years ago. But before she passed away, she went missing, and we, you know, so we put ads on Craigslist and called all the local pounds and all that kind of stuff. And one of the places we contacted was Triangle Beagle Rescue, this rescue we work with. And they, you know, we ended up finding her. They didn't find her, but we found her. But they were really helpful just in terms of like advice and putting word out to their members and things like that. And so when our dog passed away, we made a donation to them and just kind of said, oh, you know, in memory of Tammy, thank you for your help finding her or whatever. Yeah. And they sent back a thank you card. And in that thank you card was a thing saying like, have you ever considered fostering or have you ever considered volunteering with a rescue? And we're like, you know, we should do that.
Yeah.
We actually originally started working with pit bulls mostly at the local SPCA. But then we shifted over and started working full time with them, and my wife's on the board, and so we do a lot of events and fostering and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's become a passion, but it was, like I said, very much by accident. If we hadn't lost our dog, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
For those who don't know, like dog rescue is dogs that need to be adopted. Just in case there's someone out there who's picturing your beagle diving into a raging river, pulling Mark Alioto.
Yeah.
Not that kind of rescue.
Yeah. The beagles are definitely not rescuing anyone. Well, they kind of do in a way, I guess. But yeah, I enjoy it. I enjoy it a lot. It kind of keeps me, it keeps me balanced, you know, like I spend most of my time trying to take money from people and drinking and selfish things, you know, so it's nice to do something good.
I don't know, Steve, I was talking about how I want to get a comfort dog.
Yes.
And because of who I am, I would really have no trouble getting that. I'm just like, I love dogs so much. I don't know if I can have a dog because, you know, you got to make sure that you have the time for it. Otherwise, it's irresponsible.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the hardest part.
And the dog might not untilt me. It might be the opposite. I might start throwing a puppy at people.
It's definitely possible.
I had a moment.
Chihuahua looks very, very aerodynamic in a certain way. You know, I bet I could.
I bet he is. Yeah, he's almost equivalent to a football, only smaller. I had a moment like that. I went to the pound with a friend day before yesterday. And I was in with the cats, and I forgot how much I missed cats, especially after being in the room with them. And there was one in there that, like, instantly we just kind of connected. He sat right by me. We started petting, and then it was like, damn, I missed my cat. But I just can't have I'll be at work for 3-4 days in a row, and the poor thing will just be here. It's like,
right. You know? Actually, cats would probably like that. They're like, get out of the house.
Yeah, I can't have him in the house, though. I had a cat before, and he would jump up on the counter and all that, and I'm kind of a neat freak. And and on top of that, I think they like being outdoors, at least the cat I had before. Like, he didn't like being inside. He liked being outdoors where he could hunt gophers and stuff, you know?
I'm just thinking about the Chihuahua, Steven. For some reason, my mind just jumped to, like, you know, the midget throwing and tossing they have in some. Did you ever go to Mexico and do that? I'm picturing Steve with a little notebook with, like, every single human experience, and he's going through it. Jesus, I've never done midget tossing yet. Let me get in my plane.
We do it every summer in the Vegas house with Mark. It's great.
Mark, by the way, is not really short. You know, I mean, he's, but he's not like he's 5'1" or anything, you know, but he's a little shorter than everyone else.
And, he's just shorter than everyone else, and that's all that matters.
Yeah.
We still laugh about it every summer. He'll meet somebody new at the TP meetup, and they're always like, you're not even that short. Everybody jokes about you being so short. And he's like, I know. I keep trying to tell people I'm not that short.
I'm not actually 5'1", okay?
No, when I met him, I looked down to see if he was wearing heels because I was confused.
In fact, there is an argument about whether Mark or Diego are shorter, and we haven't settled that yet because they haven't been in the same room in a couple of years. But one of these days, we're gonna put them back to back and see who's shorter.
Well, do you have any hands, Derek?
Please say no.
I actually don't. I was gonna try to pull some before, but I went to get my car inspected, and I went way longer than I'd anticipated. So I apologize.
It's all good. I've got one or two here that are pretty quick.
Can I, Steve? I know you hate when I bring up politics, but just like a little 3-minute. I am kind of curious if KB has chosen a candidate yet. Are you looking, or you already have one for Democrat? If you're willing to share that. Some people don't want to talk politics at all, but I know you're a liberal end of the spectrum and anti-Trump, I think so.
I don't mind. I have not settled on anybody, and I haven't even necessarily settled on it being a Democrat.
Okay.
I like, if I could just, if somebody could just give me a libertarian candidate that I think could get elected, I could, I would be on board. But you know, you just, it's the old classic, like, I mean, am I just throwing my vote away by voting for a libertarian because I'm never going to get elected? I really like Andrew Yang.
Oh, I was just going to ask that. Okay. I was going to say, how do you feel about Yang?
Yeah. And not for, you know, I haven't like dug enough into like everybody's platforms to be like, oh, I really like his take on, you know, fucking world affairs or like, I have nothing like that. It's more of just a vibe, you know, like
that's interesting. That's what I said. The same first time I heard him, I said, well, this is a guy, he's trying to solve problems.
Yeah. He seems like a practical dude. Like, you know, this, I don't even know how serious he was about this, but he tweeted out something the other day about he's going to ban, if he gets elected, he's going to ban robocalls. And I'm like, okay, see, this is a guy who's actually identifying problems and saying that he's going to solve them. I like,
he's certain level. He's overly, if you go to his website, he has like 194 new laws he wants to pass.
Yeah.
You know, I think he's probably a guy who's just is very public spirited and was always thinking about politics. And
a dreamer.
Everything is I'm sorry.
A dreamer.
Public spirited. That just means civic minded, you know, okay. Concerned about civic matters, I guess. Okay.
Yeah. So I like him so far, but you know, he's another candidate. I assume he's running as a Democrat. I don't even know if that's true. I just don't see a world in which a guy who wants to give everybody in the country $1,000 a month is going to get elected. Like, I just don't see it happening. Exactly
what I was going to ask is how is that possible? That just means that now I have to pay $12,000 more a year in taxes. So what's the difference, right?
Well, he's going to increase the taxes on the rich, first of all. And I don't know, Steve, I think his argument, though, it's like,
grand, but they have to pay $4,000. Is that how he does it?
You know, it's funny. I actually watched a video where this concept was explained and I went into it going, well, this is ridiculous. You can't give everybody $1,000 a month. It's not going to happen. And by the end of the video, I was like, huh, that sounds like it could work.
Really?
And I wasn't sure if the guy was a great explainer or I was just really gullible idiot. One of the two. Okay. It might have actually been on the Joe Rogan podcast, now that I think about it. But I can't remember. It was
he explains how he's going to pay for it. But the more compelling thing he's explaining is how necessary it is. Like he says, 80% of shopping malls are going to be closing within the next 5 or 10 years.
Yeah.
I believe that. Everyone's just doing Amazon.
It's I mean, Steve, what do you expect these people to do for work? I mean, what's the next step down?
Well,
I mean,
they'll take a job at Amazon or they'll take a job at Walmart or whatever other.
Well, Walmart might be.
Someone has to man the system and the back end and everything to produce all that other product. You'll just get a bunch of Amazon sellers like me, I think, or like I used to be.
Well, Steve, there's going to be much less jobs involved here. I mean, it's just anytime it's like closing Blockbuster and moving to Netflix and now getting rid of Netflix and moving to streaming. I mean, everything has moved towards higher efficiency, which means less labor. So Amazon is not like going to come up with a bunch of $15 an hour jobs with insurance for people to have, you know. But anyways,
yeah, maybe, right?
A perfect example is that I hear mentioned a lot is truck drivers. Like,
yes,
like 30 years from, I don't know, maybe 20, maybe 10, there's not going to be any more truck drivers. Like all the trucks are going to drive themselves. So you're going to have all these, you know, essentially unskilled laborers who used to drive truck, you know, 70 hours a week or whatever.
There's a bunch of states where that's the number one job.
Yeah. And they're like, well, what do I do now? Like just next time you're driving down the highway, just watch every semi truck go by and go, you're going to be out of a job. You're going to be out of a job.
Yeah. It's probably 5% of the cars on the road.
Well, yeah. Steve, the rich guys like you, if they don't like the $1,000 a month, is my point, is they're going to have to come up with something. Because
yeah, I guess
you're going to get a lot more people getting fucked over. If you have like 10% of the country getting screwed, then the country's safe because we can kind of control that 10.
Once you start going
40 or 50, Steve, you're talking about your house burning down.
Here's what I'm saying is if you give everyone in the country 330 million people a grand every month, that's $12,000 a year. That money has to come back in. Or you're just increasing the debt, which is going to drive inflation. And I don't get it. So that means that I get $12,000 a year. Now I have to pay that extra $12,000 back in taxes. Why go through all that trouble?
Well,
what about the homeless guy? Is he getting $12,000 a year? And he ain't paying for anything. So do we take it from the
the
well, Steve, the homeless guy now goes down and gets a filet once a week, and it goes to the local restaurant. Who, you know what I mean? It's not like the homeless guy is going to find a tax shelter in the Virgin Islands to keep money out of the economy.
I don't know, Carlos.
Not on a filet, I can guarantee that.
Well, it's kind of even Carlos, who liked gang a lot, was just trying to think. He's got a lot of people. You give them the money. It's not like, well, okay, cool, I can pay my rent now.
Yeah.
It's gonna be just start something destructive. You know what I mean? It's not gonna help them. But I think there's a lot of people. It will help, Steve. Like I said, it's. What can I tell you? I think. Well, anyways, yeah, I think he's my man. I can already sense I'm A, boring people, and B, getting upset with Steve here. For next
Come to the dark side, Steve.
While we're on politics, what do you guys believe? I think I'm a shoe-in for this one. I made a bet with my buddy. I'll win $100 if Trump does not get impeached by the end of his term. So I think I'm going to get that one. Now for the next one, what do you think the odds are on this? If Trump does not get reelected, how can I ask this and then get your guys' odds and then see what, let me ask you that. What do you think the odds are that Trump gets reelected?
I think it's easy even money right now. Actually, I think I've heard people discussing it, but,
okay.
Yeah, I was going to say it's probably pretty close to 50-50.
I hope, Steve, you didn't get some real bad end of that. Like, you're so sure of Trump, you're like, well, I'll give you 500 if he loses, and you'll give me 100 if...
Well, here's what I did. I'm very glad to hear you guys say 50-50, because if he does not get reelected, I have to pay my buddy $100. If he does get reelected, I win 400.
Oh,
that's nice. That's a good bet, right?
Yeah, you got a good price there for sure.
Okay, all right, cool.
Like, I wonder, a lot of people are just saying, you know, the economy has to go down for him to, and we're certainly, I mean, there's always some kind of recession every 10 years. So it seems like this is.
I've been waiting for it, man. I really have. I just talked to my property manager 2 days ago, and he said, I was asking about some stuff. I was thinking about moving some things. And he's like, if Trump stays in office and if he gets reelected, it'll be status quo for a while. He said, you're probably not going to have the dip. And he said, if he does not get reelected, he said, I think there's going to be some big changes and a lot of stuff will go down. I said, okay, all right, good. That's his opinion. So I don't know. We'll see.
It's amazing. The economy's still strong. We got all these.
I want to see a dip. I want to see it.
Never mind. Bottom line.
So on that aspect, I'm rooting for him not to get reelected, because I think I can snag up some cheap stock, hopefully some cheap real estate. And I guess if he does, then I win $400. So it's either way. But
I'm picturing, Steve, the first book you write, you sitting there smiling on the cover, How to Get Rich When Everything's Going to Shit.
One thing I will say is that if, like, I'm still of this mind that if somebody just came out and said, I want to legalize online poker, or regulate it, or whatever the
whoever that was,
I would basically vote for them.
Yeah.
Not just because that would be really good for my business and good for me personally, but because it just shows me that they're like reasonable right. people. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, well, of course you should be able to play online poker. Why shouldn't you? You can play the lottery. You can play bingo at your local church. Of course. Right. So then I just go, oh, well, this guy has common sense. All right. Yes. I'll vote for them or girl, whatever it is. But I've yet to ever see anybody literally come out and say, now I assume every what's his name? The last libertarian candidate, whose name I've already forgotten, which I guess
was it Johnson from California, Colorado or something?
I can't remember. Johnson. Like, I guess he was the one guy who came out and said it. But I assume every libertarian candidate's cool with online poker. So, yeah. But yeah. So if anybody out there wants my vote, if you're listening to this, Gillibrand, whatever
her name is, bring back poker cards.
Yeah, just say that I can play online poker without fear of losing my money, and I'll vote for you.
Don't blame me. I voted for Barton. I'm making up the bumper stickers if anyone wants them. Is there still such a thing as write-in candidate? I remember when I was growing up, that was always a joke. The presidential election and Mickey Mouse, once again, 3,214 votes. You know what I mean? Like, there's always some weird people who got some write-in votes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you can still write-in votes.
I think pretty sure. Can. Yeah.
I wonder what person has gotten the most write-in votes ever. I wonder. I wonder if that's published anywhere.
It's got to be like Colonel Sanders for KFC chicken or something like that.
That's the only one, Steve, that's possible. Yes, I agree.
Well, it could be Ronald McDonald, but
it could be. Yes.
If you want to just, yeah, totally make a joke of the whole process, then Mickey Mouse is a good choice.
Yeah.
What if you'd actually draw a picture? Draw a picture of Shaggy with a joint in his mouth.
Part of me has gotten to the point now where I'm just kind of like, I don't really care because I'm like too old and I'm just going to.
Right.
I probably have like 15, 20 good years left. So it's kind of like, meh, like I'm okay. You know, if everything goes to shit, I can just move to like Bahamas or fucking Virgin Islands or something and escape the chaos. It's all right. Good. Unless those places are underwater.
The place for a third the cost.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm picturing KB with a grenade launcher with a couple young TPE members cuddled behind him, fending off the apocalypse on his farm. You know, no, it's I don't think KB is. Yeah, moving to the Virgin Islands rather than training as a survivalist is probably a better option.
Yeah. I'll just leave. Yeah. That's why people are always like, well, you know, what happens if, like, there becomes, like, a tyrannical government or something and we need to defend ourselves? I'm like, I'm leaving. I'm a huge pussy. You think I'm gonna stay here and fight a war? I'm out of here, man.
Yeah,
I'm going
daiquiris and IPAs on the beaches.
Yeah, you can find me in Costa Rica. See you. Yes.
I'll be in the San Blas Islands in Panama. Thank you.
As I desperately try to forestall any strategy talk here, you got a new podcaster there on Team TPE.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Clayton Fletcher took over the TPE podcast, which I'm really excited about.
That's a fuck up. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go on.
I thought the conversation was going to go in another direction.
It was, he called me the previous World Series of Poker, not this past one, but the one before, and was like, hey, and I was familiar with him from like the Thinking Poker podcast that he had been on a couple times. And he was like, man, I'm a big fan. I love the TPE podcast, but you never do it. Yeah. you guys never put out an episode. He goes, and he basically offered to take it over. And I was like, well, let me think about it. So I took a night to kind of consider it. And there was part of me that was like, man, I this is kind of our baby, you know, like, I don't want to give it up. It's really fun to do. And
the other hand, you're a lazy bastard. And it sounded like a good idea.
Yeah. I was like, you know what, like, what's better? Me still doing the podcast, but it coming out once every 6 months, or it comes somebody else doing it. And I can just go on it every 6 months. So yeah. So we ended, and I think there was a lot, there were a lot of people who could have called me and I would have said no, but the fact that I kind of was familiar with him as a podcasting, you know, entity,
right.
From being on the Thinking Poker podcast, I knew he was good at, you know, the good poker player. Well, I shouldn't say I knew he was a good poker player. I knew he had good results from, you know, main event and stuff like that. And he was a comedian. So I'm like, it's just kind of like the perfect, like,
sure,
combination of things, you know, and he had been listening to it from the beginning. He knows the history of the podcast and he gets the audience and all that stuff. So I was like, I mean, is there really even a better person for this than him? So we decided to give it a shot. It's been great. I think there's only 1 week that we didn't put on episodes since he started.
Yeah, he's cranking them out, and you can tell he preps for this too. The hands he wants to discuss, that sort of thing.
Yeah. So I've been enjoying it, and it's cool too because now I have a podcast I can listen to that that, you know, I'm not on. Like, because I would never listen to my old episode. Like, I would edit it, you know, I'd hear it when I was editing it or whatever.
But yeah, by the time it came out, you've already heard it twice.
Yeah, I'm like, whatever. But now, yeah, now I love it. I have some ideas for new podcasts that I'd like to do someday, but I think I'm going to save it for when I just have like more time on my hands. Like when I get sick of.
What do you want to do?
Or something. I have a few ideas. I don't really want to say one of them because I feel like it's too good of an idea. And I don't want anybody to steal
it. Someone else could take wings with it. Okay.
Yeah. But it's a good one. And it's poker related, of course.
Cool.
But I thought about doing one that was just like really short. Like I've started to listen to some podcasts that are like much shorter, you know, like 10 minutes or 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And I thought it would just be fun to do like random like thoughts and musings on the poker world. So like basically it wouldn't even be on a schedule. It would just be like, oh, this happened today. Let me record 5 minutes of thoughts about it.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, I might do that someday just because it would be really easy. Like there would be no editing or anything like that, which would be nice. I don't even think I would do like theme music or like an intro or anything. It would literally just be 5 minutes of me talking, which I'm guessing about 8 people would be interested in listening to. But, yeah,
you might be surprised.
But, but I think it'd be fun. So yeah. I don't know.
There's probably a couple, I'm sure, blogs out there where someone has successfully monetized for beer lovers. And is there anything out there that you, you know, where you're like, geez, you know, this guy, because you're a true connoisseur. I mean, you could discuss the beer in like specific ways of how it was made, not just simply, oh, this is tasty.
Yeah. Go to Durham. Stuff out there. Some of, in fact, there's some good podcasts. I used to listen to one as an example that was, I forget what it was called, but it was basically a marketing podcast, but they did it while drinking beer and they would discuss the beer as well, you know? So they'd be like, oh, on today's episode, we're drinking, you know, the Lone Rider Double Draw IPA, blah, 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 blah. And as they're talking about their real subject, in this case, marketing, they would also interject thoughts about the beer they're drinking, like, oh, I'm getting a little hint of, you know, apricot or whatever. And there's a few things like that where it's like, you know, something with beer, something over beer or whatever. So I could always do that as well with poker. That would be fun.
Steve, maybe you can find like, wouldn't it be great if you had like a Taco Bell sponsorship or something and you're asking me a question. I'm like, hold on. I'm tasting this delicious quesarito right now.
I also had a good idea for a video podcast.
Video logger, yeah.
Which I think would be fun. And I don't mind giving this away because I know I'll never do it. Mm-hmm. But it would, yeah, have you guys ever watched Drunk History?
No.
No.
So look it up sometime. It's okay. Hilarious. It's basically people getting drunk and telling stories from history. So they'll be like, you know, this is the story of, you know, I don't know, Paul Revere, whatever, when he's the world or whatever. But they're wasted while they're doing it.
It was just completely off.
Yeah, and it's just hilarious. It doesn't sound hilarious, but it is. So I
thought you were talking about like the drunken history would be the stupidest thing you ever did drunk. So I was already like, thinking back, well, Jesus, I could do like 500 episodes on that.
So I'm thinking about doing like drunk poker history or something like that. Or maybe it's just news, but you do it while you're completely shit-faced.
Oh, we could do poker news while we're shit-faced.
Yeah. So like, I think that would be fun.
We'll mail each other like six packs, you know, and then we'll both try the same beer at the same time. And by the time we get to the end, that'd be fun.
Any podcast with guys who are just having fun is usually really pretty good foundation. So yeah, a couple drunkards, you know,
and the key,
when the inhibitions lower.
Right. Yeah. And the key to it is you can't just get kind of tipsy. You know what I mean? Like you have to get to the point where you're like slurring your words and stuff. To be really funny.
We'll be taking a vomit break here. We'll be back in five.
That happens on Drunk History. It happens all the time.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah. So for anybody out there who hasn't watched Drunk History, look it up. I think all the episodes are on YouTube. It's great.
Cool. Well, are you guys ready?
I am ready.
I mean, I was searching for something else here.
I can feel it. I waited that extra half second. And I was like, he's out.
No. I'm not giving up yet.
He's reloading. Get him now.
Is the, I forget, how close are you to Cherokee? Is there a circuit event coming there anytime soon where you get to, you know, see some of the TPE guys, that sort of thing?
It was actually just here.
Oh, okay.
And I literally went to bed thinking I was going to wake up the next day and get in my car and go for one event. And I don't remember what happened, but I didn't go. Normally I would go for like a week or whatever, but I decided to save my time, money, and energy for Run It Up Reno in October. So I'm going to go to that for like 7 days, I think, and play.
You know, you're the second person to mention that. I might make my way up there. That sounds like fun.
It's a good time. I went for the first time last year. I drove up there from Vegas and I had a great time. Now it's interesting. Like people ask me, oh, you know, should I go? Is it a good series or whatever? And I always tell people it's kind of like a Twitch poker convention where there happens to be poker going on as opposed to a poker tournament, you know, that you would normally see like a circuit stop or something.
Okay.
So like the buy-ins are a little lower. I think, you know, a lot of it's like one, you know, $150, you know, no limit hold'em, $200 knockout or whatever.
Rebuys?
I think, there were definitely re-entries.
Okay.
So I always tell people, like, I had a blast, and I tell my like Twitch viewers and other Twitch streamers and stuff, I'm like, you'll have a blast. I honestly don't know for people who don't really watch a lot of Twitch if they would like it. I think they would, but I'm not sure because it's definitely, it has a different vibe to it for sure.
Okay.
Right.
October 11th through 21st is what's...
Drunken stories. You never know. KB and... I don't know. Jamie Staples might get loaded and start throwing.
That's right. Well, it was fun last year because Mark Aliotta drove over there from San Fran and met me there. So, you know, him and I don't, other than Vegas, we don't really get to hang out a ton. So it was kind of nice to hang out in a different surrounding.
I apologize for not checking you out on Twitch, but are you, what is the frequency you're doing that? Are you still enjoying that and have your large following?
Yeah, it's a good time. I actually streamed last night. This month's been a little bit slow for me because I was gone to that reunion, and then I forget what else happened. I don't know, there was other stuff in there that took up my time. Got sick for a few days. But yeah, still streaming, you know, something like 3 days a week, sometimes 4 days a week.
Okay.
And yeah, I enjoy it. It's kind of, you know, it's a good opportunity to like socialize without having to go anywhere, which is good for me.
You know what? This one looks pretty cool. I'm looking at the schedule right now for Run It Up Reno, and we got some 440 buy-ins, 235s, 235. We even got a 600. Yeah, 10K, 35K guaranteed, 3K, 300K guaranteed. So there's some good tournaments here.
Yeah, they do some fun events too. Like I know there's like an all-in or fold tournament.
Oh. I've always wanted to play one of those.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun too. There's a few events like that are, you know, gimmicky kind of things, but that seem like they would be fun.
What's the short deck? Have you guys played that?
I have.
What is it? How does it work?
It's basically no limit hold'em, except everything. The deuces, threes, fours, and fives are removed from the deck.
Okay.
Sorry, Steve. Steve really wanted it to be tiny little cards, so now he's going to be disappointed.
Yeah, Mark loves that game. No, I'm just kidding. So it's basically sixes and above, and then I think everything else is the same as No Limit Hold'em, with the exception of the fact
it must only be six players or something, right? I mean,
I think sets beat straights.
Oh wow!
Or maybe it's straights beat flushes. Okay. I played it for like a couple hours when they first released it on ACR.
Yeah, that would make sense. It's harder to hit a straight than a flush, probably. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah,
something along those lines. I know there's some different hand rankings, but I can't remember. I remember when I was playing it, I had them written down on my monitor.
Okay.
But it's fun. It's like, it's an action game because you just get dealt way more like Broadway cards, you know?
So, right.
Yeah, okay. So the perception is, yeah. Interesting. I bet there's got to be a big edge in that. It's a pretty new game, right?
Yeah, I think that people have been playing it a lot overseas, but I don't think it's as big here. So I think if you get good at it, you can crush.
All these, yeah, a lot of these edges dissipate pretty quickly, though, because everybody's chasing the money. But
I bet this October, though, it's probably – I heard about this game about a year ago. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's about when it's really getting
pros
popular.
That are just – lights out,
but Steve, I should warn you, I think there's a lot of Yang supporters in Reno, so I don't want him to attack you and grab a thousand out of your wallet. You'll be
give me your thousand this month.
Okay, Steve, give us the goddamn hand and make it quick.
Okay, all right, this will be quick. We're gonna take a quick break and then we'll come back for strategy. Alrighty, this one is from Bovada. It's a 10K guarantee, and it is pretty quick, Mikey. Okay, so we've got...
what's the buy-in?
Buy-in is, it's 33 to 50, I can't
remember. Okay, wasn't a bigger one. Okay, I was just curious.
No. Blind levels are 400, 800. We're in the small blind, and we've got 20 big blinds. It folds around to a guy that has 14 big blinds, and he opens to 2276, so a little bit less than three bigs. Button folds, and then it comes to us, and in the small blind, so again, we've got 20 bigs. The opener has 14. He raised it to almost three big blinds. We've got King Jack suited. The big blind has 52 big blinds. Nowhere near the money.
Well, have you seen this guy raise fold off under 20 bigs before would be a good question.
No, I don't believe I had. I watched about the first 20 hands when he came in, and no.
I'm sorry, what was he? He was the button?
He was the, let's see, button. He's the cutoff.
I think shoving's definitely plus EV, but yeah, I don't know. Like I said, it'd be nice if you had played a bunch of hands and had been watching Carlos style, knowing every single hand they've played. I lack that sort of ability to watch, but if it's, this is the first time, if he's been shoving and or opening 3x, and this is like the first under 3x opening, I mean, obvious stuff, it like screams big hand, you know, but you block a few of the big hands too there, so.
Yeah, we've seen 20 hands, and he's a 20-10.
Yeah, I mean, I can't imagine shoving is terrible here. It just makes me nervous because he's opening off such a short stack that it just screams strength to me. But it's also Bovada where people do weird shit. So,
he might tank fold 10s. God, why am I so unlucky? I ran into it again.
Yeah. I knew you had it. I mean, yeah, I think I'd probably rip. I can get behind ripping.
Mikey, rip as well?
Yeah. I mean, Steve, I don't play a lot of online poker, so these 20 big blind questions, I'm not the first one to ask. But yeah, it seems like, although I've had a new thing, which I've decided if I go like online tournaments, I'm thinking before I shove all in, I'm going to send a little message on the board saying, I'm poor. I have a son. My rent's $2,300 a month. Please fold.
Do me a huge solid, man. Fold.
Oh, well, are you thinking that flatting is an option here, Steve?
No. I think it's either a shove or a fold. I'm just wondering how often he folds there.
I mean, there's resources out there probably to someone his solve this quotation marks where they know what the shoving range is. Yeah, I don't know. The other thing is, I guess the table, if there's people who are just a lot of people who are open folding, then you maybe don't have to take this spot if you're kind of don't trust the villain because you got 20 bigs and there'll be other similar spots. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I shove. That's my answer.
All right. Yeah. I'm wondering what I'm thinking about is, I know it's a different hand, but I'm wondering what if it changes what we do, but if we were in the big blind, like all of a sudden, are we now considering flatting because we're just getting such a good price to see a flop? I'm not sure. It's probably still fine to just shove.
Yeah.
I think I'd rather shove there than flat.
Yeah.
Just because we'll be out of position for.
But it's one of those spots where it's like, I mean, we're supposed to be defending our big blind hugely wide anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not even so much that I think like flatting is
right.
Is necessarily bad. It's more a question of if shoving is just better.
It does give you does give you the other option, obviously, of just calling.
Yeah.
And
yeah. I don't think we can ever call here. I think that would be bad.
Yeah, I think so too.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. All right. I'm glad you guys said that. I end up shoving. And then I remember this hand. He took a long time and then he folded.
Okay.
I don't know.
We win.
Yeah, we won. Yeah. I remember thinking I'm gonna mark this hand because I don't know if like was he folding? Like maybe he was folding like an ace three or something, which I think would why didn't he just shove it? But I don't know. It's Bovada.
Bovada.
Yeah. I don't know. Cool. We got one right, Mikey.
Oh. Yeah.
That's how I felt.
I so wanted the guy to snap you off with aces too. I gotta be honest, I was anti sweating you with a hand history. I mean, what I'm such a bad person.
I got one more quick one.
All right.
Do you guys got time? You gotta run?
10, 9, 8. Go ahead, Steven.
All right. Okay, this is the level same Bovada, same tournament, just a little bit next level. It's 500 and 1,000 with a 100 chip ante. Full ring, so we've got 9 players, and we are UTG 1 with ace king off suit, we've got 19 big blinds. And what are you guys like doing here? Behind us, we have 38 big blinds, 14, 20. That looks like 1.1 big blinds. What is that?
Man, 1.1. That guy's really holding on.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's 6.5. That's way off. Okay. The small blind has 7 big blinds, and the big blind has 8. Okay.
Man, so, that's a lot of short stacks. Originally, I was just going to say I would just open here like 100% of the time. I'm trying to think if it changes because of all these damn short stacks. Like, do it too much.
I think here's what I do with like Bovada small. I'm trying to think, what does Carlos do? And I know often he's like really imbalanced here in the spot. Like he'll make it 6x with kings. Or I mean with ace king.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like that's the one hand where he's just like trying to cut or just shoving.
Right.
But you know, opening 2x and snapping off a shove is fine too.
Yeah.
But I think you're supposed to be shoving your whole, you know, what are you doing with pocket eights here, Steve? If you're shoving pocket eights, you probably, you know, you're supposed to be shoving ace king. You know what I mean? If you're going to shove ace queen suited, you should be shoving ace king.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
I'm often just to simplify things. Once I'm shoving in a lot of spots where it's probably not the most profitable, you know, just to make the game easy so I can shove a hand and then just turn around and watch the football game for 20 seconds. Oh, what happened over here?
Less buttons to click.
Yeah.
I know I'm making money here.
Exactly. So I don't know if it's the most profitable, but I think I'm just shoving here, especially early position, you know.
If the table's super active, super aggro, I might just open to try to get somebody to ship over me, but I don't know. I might just shove. I'm trying to, like, I would certainly shove like 14 bigs. So
yeah,
I don't know how much that extra five matters to me.
Yeah, and apart, you know, limp shove is kind of sexy here too, depending on, you know, what kind of table you have.
Yeah, that can be interesting.
If you got a few people, Steve, that are, you think will attack this, you know.
Yeah, my main thought here with this hand is sizing. You know, 19 big blinds under the gun, one to our left. We got 38, 14, 20, 6, 10, 7, and 8. It's like, I'm thinking even like a min raise or something.
Yeah, if I was going to raise, I would definitely just min raise.
Okay. Okay.
Me personally, although it is kind of interesting what Mike was talking about, like with these like big raise sizes, especially because on Bovada, it makes you just look like a huge fish.
Yeah.
It might have been a different situation. It might have been Carlos 3-betting to like a massive amount, like 6x, 7x.
Yeah.
To get him to fold pocket fours, but, you know, call with king. I'm sure his rationale was smarter than anything I could come up. But I remember a few spots where, like, the ace king, where he was definitely trying to kill the action pre-flop. You know what I mean?
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
If it was suited, I would much more likely min raise or limp, try to limp shove, if depending on the table. But ace king off, I'm sticking with the shove. But But bet sizing, if I'm raising, yeah. I don't know why you'd want to be just a min raise though. You think all these people are just in shove or fold mode? So
I think so. And my thought is, well, maybe they don't think this. What would the recreational player on Bovada think if the blinds are 500, 1,000, I make it 2,000 and he's in the small blind with 7,000. Can he think that he has any fold equity there, or can the big blind with 8,600 think that he has any fold equity if I make it 2,000 there? I think a recreational player in the big blind might think he gets full.
Well, the other problem though, Steve, is these people might not be totally like stack aware. So you might get four callers here too.
That's true. That's the risk you take.
You know, the one, so you got people flatting off, you know, 6 big blinds with pocket jack. I don't know that probably
with
that
anything. Yeah. With 9-7 suited or something. Yeah. I know that's a risk you take. I made it 3.1 and I can see after reviewing this that, you know, running through the hands, I was in robot mode of like, make it bigger than 3x and done. And then as I was reviewing it, I was like, well, maybe there's a better size here than this, like you said, shoving or even less than 3x.
Oh, you think you're killing action where some people might shove with worse here if you min raised it. Okay. Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah, I don't know.
I think that's like in most situations my default would be just a min raise.
Okay.
And then obviously get it in against anybody who shoves or
yeah.
whatever. But I don't know. I was just kind of thinking if these shorter stacks change that for me. I mean, I don't know that it does. It would just depend a lot on the like table dynamics. But
I guess, you know, theoretically, if everybody was a little deeper, I guess you would want to min raise. Would you want to raise more than shove because you don't want to take away your stealing opportunities on a certain level?
Yeah.
Because if you shove three times and then like you steal, you try to just start stealing with medium strength hands. If you shove ace king under, you know, early position, then you can't try to steal with king nine suited.
Yeah.
From early position. You know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I guess you could shove that too, but you know what I'm saying? It's
I think that'd be,
if you still want to do little cute little, you know, bet folds off of a smaller stack. But the thing is when they're so short, 10 big binds and under, I don't know if there is like that steal.
Yeah.
Okay. You know what I mean? Like you can't. It's hard to open it and then fold the seven or eight bigs here, you know? So.
Yeah. Maybe you're right. Maybe shoving just is the best. And then you get basically anyone from probably the hijack back with ace jack suited or better. That'll just just call you, I guess, you know?
Yeah. I don't know, Steve. So what did, so you made it 3.1 and what happened? Everybody folded and you.
Oh, the rest is pretty uneventful. I make it 3.1. We get around to the small blind who calls, and the big blind fold. No, I'm sorry. The big blind calls as well. So there's 10K in the pot, and they have 5K and 6K back, respectively. The small blind bets out almost all of his stack, leaving himself like one big blind, and the big blind folds, and then it's on us. So there's 10 big blinds in the pot, and we got to call. Four.
What was the flop?
We have ace king with the king of hearts, and the flop is six of hearts, three of hearts, deuce of diamonds.
Yeah, you're calling any shove there.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's actually even better. You're not calling four to win 10, Steve. You're now calling four to win really 18.
18.
Because, yeah, you don't even need 25% equity, which you do against every single thing other than a set, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Yeah, my main question on that one was the opening size. I wasn't sure. Like, yeah, all these short stacks, does that sound, that should have played a part? And I could tell I was just in robot mode, you know.
Great call by those guys, by the way, with those stacks. Just well played. I got six blinds. I'm going to see a flop.
Yeah.
Steve, do me a favor, and like if you're going like hit on women at a grocery store, take notes. We can talk about that in the podcast. That I enjoy.
Okay.
Bravada shove fold is just, it's just not what I want to talk about.
How about our next episode? You and I do one on the dating apps, on the Tinders and all that.
I just want to make jokes about you, Steve. I don't want to actually talk about my own failures.
Sign up for some of those and start swiping and in 2 weeks.
No, I do. I actually... You know, I'm just your typical unrealistic. I don't know. Like, I probably have a woman who likes me on Bumble, you know, five or six times a week. Okay. And I'm swiping left on most of them, saying no, thank you. And a couple ones I've started conversation, it started okay. And I'm like, yeah, I don't, we've talked about this, Steve. I just, yeah, it's going to take some very weird circumstance for me to pick up because I don't have the energy or the desire here. So, but, yeah, I'd be curious, Steve. I should let you look at my profile and see what.
Yeah,
see what I'm doing. I was adamant. Like I had a couple of women who looked at it. They said you got to take a picture of, because I had one. And I do have one up there with me in the poker trophy. Actually, no, I don't. I have one with me at a poker table with the, you know,
yeah,
an impressive phallic chip stack in front of me. But like this woman's like, you got to take it down. I'm like, well, this is what I do for a living, because like just gambling terrifies women, she's explaining, you know what I mean? So I mean, every woman has her friend whose husband ran off and blew 10k at blackjack and blah blah blah, you know what I mean? So understandably they're fearful.
I have heard that that's the best advice, is to have a multitude of women look at your profile and let them essentially make it for you. Like
that, because they, it's so like simple and brilliant. I can't believe I haven't thought of that.
and take a borrow somebody's puppy and take a picture with the puppy. Don't throw it like a football. Just take a picture with it and use that on there too.
Huh. That's brilliant.
Maybe a photo of you working at a food bank, something like that would be good.
Yeah, Steve, you naked in a bathtub with 6,000 butt plugs covering you. It's just, it's weird to some people.
That
picture you need to lose.
I'd swipe on that.
You might want to actually start a conversation with that guy now that I think about it. Yeah. I think I told you, Steve, once, just as a joke, I was having trouble with it or whatever. And I just, you know, this was like 10 years ago, I think, or maybe whatever. I put in like a fake profile. Or I use my own profile, but I just change all the comments. I'm like, I only date bisexual women. I'm going to end up banging your friends anyways. I'd like you to join. Like that kind of stuff.
Did you get any interest?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Really?
Well, I think people probably sensed that it was a joke thing kind of thing. So they were amused by it.
Cool. Well, thank you for coming on the show, Derek. This was fun.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Good times. Good catching up. We missed each other in Vegas, so we had to make up for it.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did. And
if either of you end up going to Run It Up Reno, let me know.
I'm excited. Okay, October 11th through 21st. I'm going to take a look at my calendar as soon as I press stop record. And I'll try to schedule something in there. That's exciting.
Cool. Sounds good.
Mikey and I did that. Not that one. We did. We did a WSOP circuit event where Mikey won his ring.
And that's where Steve almost hit his plane into the side of a mountain on the way there, didn't you? Steve, you almost died twice flying your plane.
I didn't almost die. It was.
You said you were much too close. I don't know what that constitutes.
I should have gained a little bit more altitude before I went over the mountains. That was.
That seems like a good idea. More altitude is good when you're flying.
I wanted to hear it. Steve, you could have told a story where you went so low just so you could high five a snowboarder. I can see you doing something like stupid like that. Okay, I'm sorry. Why end with negativity there, Steve? Thank you. Excellent podcast, Mr.
KB, thank you,
Mr. Barton.
Right on. Well, thank you, Derek. Thank you, Mikey, and thank you for tuning in. Here is your weekly motivational speech.
Most people don't reach their dream not because of failure. Most people don't live their dream because they give up. You see, it's not the failure that stops us, but that most stop at their first failure. Those who succeed don't stop at one failure. They don't stop at 10 failures. They don't stop at 100, 1,000, or a million. They say, this is my goal, and I will do whatever it takes to achieve it. I will learn the lessons from any failures. I will learn faster. I will work harder. I will work smarter. And I will not quit until my dream is a reality. That's the difference between success and failure. Failure makes winners stronger. Failure makes winners hungrier. But it makes most give up. It makes most feel worthless. Winners don't enjoy failure, but they would never let failure stop them. Next time you encounter failure, you got to remember every great thing on this planet is here because the Creator learned what did work, but learned more from what did not work. When we are kids, we don't stop at failure. When we first learn to ride a bike, it's failure after failure. We get knocked down time after time, but we get up and push forward until we achieve our goal of riding the bike. But then we get old and most of us get weak. We are too soft to get back on the bike. We come up with excuses. It must not be for me. No, you just soft. No, you just lazy. Tell yourself the truth. Get back on the bike. Learn why you fail and make sure you don't fall again. Make sure you are stronger for having the lesson.